Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Hard Shoulder
with the MG Hybrid and Electric range, celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Well, our next item contains sensitive topics and may not be suitable for some ears, so please do turn down your radio if you feel the need to do so. Well, last week on The Hard Shoulder, we spoke to John Joe McGinley. He's the parent and founder of AutismDad.ie, about having children who are using the child and adolescent mental health services. Well, today, Nolene Hustis of Families for Reform of CAMHS joins us to share her experience as a mother whose son was in the system from the ages of 5 to 13, and Nolene lost her only son, Kelvin, to suicide in May of this year. Nolene, you're very welcome to the programme, and thank you for coming in to speak to us. It was yourself and Kelvin and your daughter, Shannon. Yeah. How are you both doing?
Not great. Grief changes you. Somebody dying so young and seeing their struggles and knowing they want to live. Totally. I don't think I'll ever be the same person again as my daughter is the same. And her daughter is struggling as well with the whole thing.
With the loss, with the pain, with the grief.
Big change.
Tell us about Kelvin. What kind of a person was he? What was his personality, his favourite things to do? What do you remember about him most?
His humour, because he had Asperger's, he had a very black and white humour. Things that other people would kind of like stand back and go, oh my God, whereas I understood him and we understood him and we'd laugh, even though I'd say to him at times, curb it, you know, slow it down a little bit. But excuse me, his humour, his love for animals, he absolutely loved his dog, loved her, Coda, loved the grandkids, loved his girlfriend, very empathetic. Empathetic to the point where I think it nearly caused him a physical pain. You know, if he heard something about somebody, sometimes I wouldn't even tell him if something had happened to somebody because he would get obsessed with it and get so upset about it.
He would actually feel it physically.
He'd be really upset. And I remember Shannon trying to tell him something once and I said, just don't tell him because he'd be up all night.
He started, though, showing signs that he was struggling at a really young age, Nolene.
I would have said, you know, around 18 months. Obviously, I had a daughter and you've been around children and sisters and brothers and things like that. But he started with night terrors about 18 months and really, really bad, to the point where he'd flip himself out of the cot. And he'd be banging his head and banging and banging and banging. And I basically, it was nearly like looking at someone in a seizure, even though I knew it wasn't a seizure. He'd be so rigid and then you just kind of let him come out of it. And he would have talked to me later on in life that they were like, he'd remembered them. He actually remembered, he said, seeing colours and hearing things. But he then was banging his face and saying, monsters, monsters. And between that and not getting on with his food, not sleeping. I brought him to the public health nurse and the doctor when he was about 2 years of age. And that's when I first raised concerns. There's something not right here. And I was basically told, no, I don't think there's anything. And I understand that when they're two, they can go through the terrible twos and that. But then I would have, more things were happening and more regular and it was getting worse. The sleep, never slept. Food was an issue. The banging and the jumping and just very, just different.
And was he reaching other milestones?
Yeah, he was, in the sense of, like, you know, walked on time, talked on time. Everything else seemed, but there was something different. There was something else different. Like, I mean, like, he'd nearly climb like a rat up the press. Like, he was just like, it was like, that's not, you know, that's not normal. Like, I mean, kids climb, but the way he'd go and the speed he'd go, and I'm like, that's really unusual, you know. And then like that flipping himself out of the cot and fear, full of fear. Like for a child to be afraid, there's a certain element of being afraid, but his was to another extreme afraid.
And what would he be afraid of?
Noise, something unexpected, a knock on the door, really now to the point where like it was like a spider would scream the house down on another level. It was another level. I'm like, really, what is going on? You know, and that's when I would have brought him back to the doctor around four. And at this stage, he would have started to be obsessed with fireworks, really obsessed with fireworks and lights and things like that. And I thought, right, okay. And it was, kids like things, but this was on a different level. It was on a different level.
And it sounds like the type of thing, though, that when you bring a child to a doctor for 15 minutes, in front of that doctor, they will behave perfectly, and I'm putting this in quote, yeah, normally.
Yeah.
And you're trying to plead with the doctor, no, I see things at home. I see things at home. And if you could spend a bit more time, you would see it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was an instinct nearly that you had.
Oh, I knew as a mother, I'm like, you know, I mean, as I say, I was raised with siblings and I had my daughter and I thought, no, there's something just not right here. Like, you know, that aggressive bang in the head. And, you know, I was like, you know, there's just something not right. And I intuitively knew. And that's when the referral would, I think I got listened to then because I started to keep a diary of stuff that was going on. And I got listened to then and he sent the referral to CAMHS when he was around between four and five. He would have went to CAMHS and yeah, he would have basically was with them till he was 13. And things got worse, like, things got worse in that time where he was, like, people would call it violent. I would call it frustration now when I look back. It wasn't violence towards a person. It was pure and utter, couldn't regulate himself, where he'd break things up and it was pure and utter frustration. So that got worse as soon as he went to school.
And I was just about to ask you, how did he find that school environment, that kind of strict school environment?
He was fine, you see, and this is the piece about the mask, and he was fine in the school environment. There may have been probably two incidences in school, but they hold it and he held it till he came home, and that's when we would have seen the lash. I would have seen the lash when he came home. Now, the school did refer him to Rainbows because they seen emotionally he wasn't great. But there had been three deaths in my family very quickly. My mother, my father and my brother died of cancer in 6 years. So they kind of looked at that, which I did as well, but I knew there was something else. And CAMHS looked at that, all the deaths in our family, because he then became obsessed with death and dying to another level. To another level, his artwork. I still have the artwork at home. The art stuff at home was like, ooh, there's something seriously under, you know, not right here. Kids experienced it. It's a natural thing. But Kelvin became obsessed with it. Totally obsessed with it.
As in thinking about it, talking about it, asking questions about it.
Never stopped. Every art piece of art he did was all about death, 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 dying, killing. And I'm like, and he was in an after school club and the woman in the after school club said to me, I need you to look at this. And I brought that to CAMHS and said to them, there's other people saying stuff here.
So you say you were engaging with CAMHS. For people out there who have never dealt with CAMHS, what does that actually look like?
It's Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service. And basically, my experience and Kelvin's experience of it is he was going there. Obviously, they thought there was something and that did come out in the end. They did think there was something because he was with them for all them years. And he was going there sometimes weekly and talking to a clinical nurse specialist. And he'd talk for the hour. She told me he'd spin around on the chair for the whole hour, on an office chair, just spin for the whole hour talking. And they did do an assessment on him, which is the Connors assessment, which was for ADHD, which he was never officially diagnosed with ADHD. They had said he didn't have it. But basically, he attended them, ongoing, that assessment was done, no other assessment was done, no OT assessment, which an OT assessment in the end really, really was good when I got it done privately. But he was there till he was basically 18, and I wouldn't say it was of any use to us at all. They did Marty Mayo with me, which is looking at your parenting style and your relationship with the child. And in my, when I look at my relationship, was very good with Kelvin. It was probably better than a lot of parents because I really honed in on trying to support him. Set me on a parenting course that I did for one day, and I thought, I'm not coming back here. I don't need to be here. Really, and I, to be honest with you, I didn't have childcare either. I was on my own with my two children. I really could ill afford to be out of the house. So I went once and I said, I'm not going back there. I don't need to be there. I'm doing all right as a parent. I just need support. If somebody had said to me at that time, Kelvin has Asperger's and generalised anxiety disorder, dyspraxia and sensory processing disorder, I would have gave up college or deferred for a year to be at home to support him. I would have, like.
But you didn't get that, diagnosis from them?
No, not till I got it myself privately.
So how did you go about that, and what age was Kelvin at that point, and what drove you to seek this private diagnosis for Kelvin?
Kelvin was getting worse as we were going along, as we know, with adolescence and going into secondary school. And when he went to secondary school at the age of 13, he basically was struggling big time in secondary school and was being bullied and told me he was suicidal. At the age of 13, he was about 6 months in secondary school and he was already attending CAMHS. And then I went to my doctor and said, I need to go somewhere with him today. I had a plan in my head. The next time he's in a crisis, I'm going to a hospital. I'm going to do that.
And what was a crisis?
Suicidal. He was suicidal. And I said, and the doctor said to me, sure, you're already involved with CAMHS. Wait and see them on Monday. I said, my son is suicidal. I'm not waiting. And in the background, the school had organised, I broke down at a parent-teacher meeting and I said to the resource, the resource head, I said, there's something going on with my son. He doesn't want to be in school. I know he's been bullied, but there's a lot more. And I spoke to her and they organised an educational psychology assessment as well. So it was all coming at the right time. And this all happened within a month. And Kelvin ended up in Temple Street. And I'll never forget it. There was an outbreak of chicken pox at the time, and they brought him straight in Temple Street, and he met a fabulous psychiatrist there, and we got him in. I got him in the moment, and he spent about 2 hours in Temple Street, and she said, I'm sending an urgent referral back to CAMHS. Urgent, she said. So she got him. He spoke. I went in afterwards because she spoke to him on her own, and it was what they do, and that's okay. And the referral went back to CAMHS. The educational psychology assessment kicked in, and he said to me, your son has Asperger's, but I can't clinically diagnose him. You need to go private. So I went private. All this happened within a month. I went private. Cost €900 at the time. And they gave me an 18-page report. And they knew literally straight, he's Asperger's. They knew. So then I rang CAMHS. I'm very disappointed. And I said to the woman on the phone who I knew and I had a relationship with, not that other lady, I said, they're saying Kelvin has Asperger's. And she said, yeah, we kind of taught that. And I thought, the cheek of you, like.
I've been waiting for this diagnosis.
For 8 years.
So that we can get specific help for a long time.
Yeah.
Bring me up to May of this year. He was 26 years of age. Mm. He had gone to college. He was going to graduate. He had a girlfriend you mentioned.
5 years, yeah.
But he was still really struggling.
Yeah. Kelvin told me on numerous occasions, Kelvin attempted suicide at least 10 times that I know of. One time I cut him down. I got to him on time. I was after doing a night shift and I heard something and I got him. So I always had that in the back of my head. Always had it in the back of my head. And in a way, the last year, he broke his back in a car accident in June last year. June 24, I found out after that was a suicide attempt. And he seemed to do certain well enough kind of after that, but he always told me every few weeks, I'm suicidal. And he would have told me, I'm never not suicidal. And obviously, I'm a social care worker. I know what to do. And I've done all the questions and asked him the questions. And would you like me to bring you here? Now, I personally, if I was suicidal, wouldn't go near our local general hospital because I brought him there 60 times in 1 year and they never admitted him once. So I could understand when he didn't want to go there. So I wouldn't want to. So he did quite well to a certain degree. believe it or not. Even though he was saying he was suicidal, that wasn't unusual to a certain degree. He did quite well, the fact that he did his course. He was still in his relationship with Vicky. He had a car. He was doing, you know, fairly okay even around substance misuse. It wasn't daily.
Because he had been using drugs,
over the years,
you feel,
since he
to help him cope.
Yeah, since he was 16, on and off, he definitely would have. And he would have had one or two really bad years around that. And that's real to me now. It's real. People shove that under the carpet, but that's the reality. What happens with people with mental health issues and dealing with all that in your head. And I would have felt he was in a better place in many ways. But a month before he passed away, he told me, and he always said it, "I'm not going to live to be an old man." And I said, "Really?" And he said, "No, ma, I just can't do it. I can't do it." And he asked me for assisted suicide. And I said to him, "I can't do that, Kel." I said, "You know, like, it's not legal in Ireland." And it's terrible to say that them conversations became normal. They became normal in my home. And obviously the following day I would have said to him, "How are you today? Are you okay?" And he'd say, "Yeah, I'm grand. I'm grand." And that would be, it'd be gone again. But I did say to him, you need to go back to the mental health services, who he was with. And his doctor had put him on weekly medication. And that's a risk assessment they do, that they won't give them monthly meds in case he overdoses. And he was very stressed with the course. He was very stressed trying to finish his course. And he did it. And I was so proud of him. And he graduated on the Wednesday. And my feeling as a mother, and from my experience, my son was psychotic from the Wednesday. And I know that from what I seen and how he was. And I tell you, like, you don't see this too often. His friends got a plaque made for him, and it's on his grave. "Boys, I'm in a psychosis." That's on his grave.
He knew this himself.
He was always saying it to them. Always saying it to people. That's on his grave. "Boys, I'm in a psychosis," and a picture of him is on his grave. That's how much he spoke about it. See, this is the thing. It's okay to talk. My son did talk. He told everybody. He told everybody. But nobody listened.
And you say he did try and he was willing to engage, but it sounds like it all came very late.
Yeah, and to tell you that, like with Asperger's, early intervention is key. Simon Harris's brother, Adam, is a prime example of somebody who gets early intervention. My son could have done as well as him, if not better. Very intelligent young man, very charismatic, very approachable, very sociable. If he'd got early intervention, and Tony Atwood talks about that in his book, if he'd have got early intervention, my son would have done well. Could have done well, would have done well. Do you know? I said it to him, "You have a master's in you. You don't only have a degree, you have a master's in you." And I knew he had. Excelled in all his educational stuff. It was the stuff outside of that, the noise, sensory, people, you know. But put him in the right setting, right supports, he would have flew it.
In the time since your son's passing, Nolan, you have been incredibly courageous in speaking out. What do you want people, and especially policymakers who might be listening here, to understand about what families go through when the system, as you say it, fails?
It's killing people. That's the crux of it. It is killing people. It's destroying families. My daughter left home at 17 because she could not live in our home because it was such a hard environment. I mean, if I had children, smaller children in that house, where would you be? Where, you know, trying to manage that, somebody constantly telling you they're suicidal, regularly trying to end their life, spending so many nights. How would you manage as a family with three or four children? Like, something's got to give. I mean, I ended up suicidal myself. I ended up attempting suicide myself. It's happening out there. I mean, policymakers need, the likes of CAMHS need to listen to the mother. Listen to the parent. If it's a father, if it's a mother, listen to them. Spend the money on assessing the children. Like, I know somebody, a friend of ours, the young lad is 9. It's as clear as it's light as day out there. He's autistic. His mother knows it. I know it. He's even getting the supports in school. He's 9. They still haven't assessed him. Now, they're in breach of the Disability Act. They're breaking their own rules, like. Do you know what I mean? And the result is people are dying. 48 suicides a month in Ireland.
And Kelvin really suffered.
Suffered. I wouldn't put a dog through what he went through. This is going to sound, and I really feel, don't feel right saying this. There's a part of me relieved. Because you know what I seen? Imagine your child sitting there saying, "Gee, I want to die." Imagine, like, all because of our state. Our state. I know. If you put the right supports around any human being, how well they can do. You know, my son is dead. But not only that, it's happening daily, 48 a month. Like, it's more than one a day. That's cruel.
If you could change one thing about the system, what would it be, Nolene?
Early diagnosis. Early diagnosis, that's all. I would have changed and adapted my life. I would have done, I wouldn't have pushed him into a secondary school. I would have homeschooled him. I wouldn't have pushed him into an environment that he couldn't cope with. Do you know? Early diagnosis, that's all that would have changed. So what? Give someone carers allowance, a domiciliary care allowance. They can educate themselves on their child's condition. Do you know? And even that money opens up, that few bob opens up the money, like for OT. Things like the OT would have said to us, if you feel such a way in the morning, have a shower, that brings you up. Have a shower, it brings you down. An OT, you can be guided. You can educate yourself. Like, you can do courses online. I did them once we had the diagnosis, but it was a little too late. Like,
Nolene Huestis, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about Kelvin and the changes that you want to see this to the services that are supposed to be available for children just like him. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Hard Shoulder.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range. Celebrating 100 years of passion for the road. Recharge your soul.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.